You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where I live. IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
Hey, listeners.
And Dan Stapleton.
Scooped.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about loading screens.
I love those.
We're going to talk about...
You can play some of them.
We're going to talk about video game addiction.
Now that everybody's tuned out,
yeah,
what are we really going to talk about?
But first, E3 is just a week and some change away right now.
Yeah, by the time a lot of people are listening to this, a week from that day, which people will be going down to E3.
Wow.
Yes, exactly.
That's the math that I'm working on right now.
We're going to see a lot of games at E3. We're going to see a lot of games that we won't be playing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
One of them could be the Final Fantasy VII Remake, which there's some news this week how development has shifted back to Square Enix internal development. I think it was CyberConnect that was handling development, the main thrust of development on the remake.
Sounds like it's not been going great.
And now...
When was that game announced?
Two E3s ago, so 2015.
No, the 7 Remake.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought 7 Remake was from PS3 era, like seven or 8 years
ago. No, it's been rumored forever, but it wasn't officially
The time it was like confirmed E3 was the same E3 that Last Guardian was revealed, right? Two E3s ago. The development's being pulled back into Square Enix internal, and they said the game is still years out.
Yeah.
That it along with...
But you guys do remember the cinematic trailer from like 10 years ago, where they're like, it was used to show off the PS3.
Yes, but that wasn't a real product.
It was never became a product.
But maybe that helped fuel the like.
That was there were already rumors about. You're right. There were rumors about the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and they showed this real time demo, and then they were like, "This is not a real product. We're just showing off the power.
We're just messing with you."
Yeah, but potentially exactly. It could have been in development this whole time.
But I don't think it was.
But it's years away still.
Still years away. Which prompts our first email this week, which comes from. Big Tony
Big
Style.
Big Tony Style.
It's been a while since we've heard from our good
friend.
And he says, with E3 right around the corner and the news of Final Fantasy VII Remake development shifting to Square Enix internal development, I started thinking about games that get announced at E3 prematurely. Premature announcement, as they call that affliction. With the many years you have attended the conference, I'm wondering, what are some games that stood out to you that either never saw the light of day or have been stuck in development limbo?
Project Hammer.
Which one is that?
That was a Wii game that was announced.
Yeah, that game looks so cool.
With used like the nunchuck and the controller with like you know like big hammers. It's basically arms. It's basically arms.
No, but so I thought that was the Pikmin-ish one where.
I mean, there was a guy with a hammer and it was called Project Hammer. That's as much as you're gonna get out of me for that one.
Really?
Yeah, but it was a launch game, or a launch. I mean, it was
who?
Announced around before the
by
launch.
Nintendo.
Yeah.
It was
A Nintendo game, wow.
Yeah.
I think StarCraft Ghost is another famous one that was made an appearance at several E3s and then just never happened.
That's from like late 90s, 2000s.
That was in the
2000s,
yeah.
I was really excited that we were going to talk about Final Fantasy because we have a Final Fantasy expert on the show today.
Yeah,
Dan Stapleton.
Oh, yes.
Who's never played a Final Fantasy game.
I played one of the NES ones. I couldn't tell you which one.
You didn't even play?
There's only one NES one, Dan.
Well, yeah. In
the US.
English, yeah.
Did you grow up in Japan? All the Dragon Quest games?
Not many people know that about me.
Drakuei. You're more of a Drakuei fan,
There's been a few. I was a big Sega kid growing up, and didn't have an appreciation for Nintendo until I was a little older. And I got to play, there's a 3D Vector Man that never came out.
Wow.
They were going to reboot Vector Man.
At E3?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. This is a real thing.
I'm sorry, Dreamcast?
It was when Sega was already third party. So I think maybe it was demoed on PS2, I guess. It would have been E3, probably 2003 or 4, one of the very first E3s I ever went to.
Why is it called Vector Man? He's made out of balls.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Maybe because they follow like straight vectors or something?
I have a pretty good Vector Man impression. He says, whoa.
Wow, I didn't know Vector Man spoke.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Played that game.
So the more recent games that are not
three,
that's
what I was gonna say. I think that was from that same year, that Final Fantasy VII remake at the Sony conference 2015.
What's gonna come out first, FF7 remake or Shenmue 3?
Wait, those games aren't really lost though.
No, but I'm saying
they're not lost, just been announced.
The question is, maybe they're announced too early. Just like if you're
Death Stranding,
if your game is showing up
at a good example.
2, 3, 4, 5 E3s, maybe you should have waited to make the announcement.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
Crackdown is the big one from Microsoft.
Crackdown is another one from Microsoft.
That was announced with the launch of the Xbox One, wasn't it?
I think it was announced the following year. It was announced in 2014.
Okay.
That's
a long time.
It's a subtle difference, but a difference between games that hit some trouble, like Crackdown. I guess where I'm extrapolating a little.
They have hit trouble.
Right. Like it seems like that game was kind of on track and something happened and it hit some trouble versus things that they did, like Shenmue was a logo and that was it. Like
the Kickstarter
went live.
So there wasn't any game that existed.
So that one, they knew.
The Kickstarter raised the money and everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
It split, like Sony's funding it as well.
And theoretically, they had more than the logo and they didn't just go out there with the logo and an idea.
But that does happen sometimes.
I'm sure it does.
And, so that's an example of a game that they knew when they announced it that game was years and years away. Whereas some, I think, they were a little too ambitious.
We talked about Crackdown. Also on Xbox One, there's this game Gigantic.
Oh, right.
An MMO announced in 2015.
I thought it was a MOBA. It's out, isn't it?
I don't think it's out. I don't think it's ever officially out.
Maybe it's one of those games that's
like
early access.
I think it's been game preview, but it's never been
just
out.
A long, long time.
Yeah, that's from 2015.
I didn't mean to look at your notes, but Dreams. I'm so happy that didn't come out.
Well, yeah,
that looks scary.
I wasn't ready to jump over to PlayStation 4 yet, but sure, Dreams was announced for PlayStation 4 in 2015.
Yeah,
and that was
Media Molecule, right?
Is it a VR game that uses the Move controllers?
Where I don't think
it
was
VR.
It's not VR.
It was a game maker, I think, or like an experience maker.
I think you use
the
Move controllers to create assets in a game world,
I was not into it at all. It just looked really weird.
Do you think is that game ever coming out?
Yeah,
it's been.
I don't know.
2 years.
Yeah. I know. Maybe. It looks like something that stoners would really appreciate.
I don't know if sometimes maybe the hype just doesn't take off.
Yeah.
And people
and they just quietly just let it.
Sony really
mentioned it again.
I mean, E3 2015, like that was the year that they blew the doors out. They had the orchestra and
Orchestra was last year.
Oh,
God of War.
Okay, so 2 years in a row they've done this. I mean, maybe not with the orchestra, but I just mean like. There, we've talked about it a little on Scoop before. Like they always have a more impressive E3, and they just have it timed out perfectly. Like game announcement, trailer, demo, blah 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 blah. And then everyone's like, "Oh my God, Sony crushed E3!" And then
years later, we're still waiting.
Well, that's
games.
What they're a lot better about. Like they ended their conference with Spider-Man, and they're a lot better about building hype, And then, but then I'm like, wait a second. It's a Spider-Man game years away.
Yeah, there's still no release date for Spider-Man. I mean, it could be this year.
We'll see more of that from E3 this year, I'm sure. But
one of the games that I've been waiting for a very, very long time, it's notoriously been taking a long time to develop, is Below.
Yeah.
From Capybara. That game was announced in 2013.
Goodness gracious.
13, 14, 15,
2013.
16. This will be its fifth year at E3 if it is.
I always think about Below as a PAX game.
When was Deep Down?
Well, so that was announced.
Canceled.
It was that, canceled or just
I don't think it was ever officially canceled. But that was announced at the PlayStation 4 reveal in February of 2013. I don't think it's ever actually made an appearance at E3. I think it's probably vaporware.
And then they announced that it was going to be free to play.
Yeah.
But. And then it had some weird, like, Assassin's Creed-esque, like, it was a Dark Souls game, you know, a fantasy game. But then there was some sort of hints that it was post-apocalyptic or futuristic in some way. It looked neat.
And I think there's been a couple instances of Yoshinori Ono being like, we'll have more to share next year. And then it just never comes around. And then what about Cuphead?
Yeah.
We are still waiting on Cuphead. That game has no release date.
Three E3s now?
Yeah. It has no release date. I would think it would be coming this year, but...
Game's got to come out. Yeah. You got to release your game.
Star Fox 2, still waiting on that one.
Yeah.
It's completely done.
Didn't they release that as Star Fox Zero for the Wii U?
No, that's not the same game.
I know. All right. We did get a Star Fox game last year. I just don't think anybody cared much about it.
Two Star Fox games.
That's right.
Yeah, Star Fox
there
Guard.
Was also the Guard.
Oh, yeah.
Which was cool.
Yeah, Jose liked that more than Zero.
It's likable. It's really interesting. Wii U RIP.
Dead Island 2 was announced at E3 in 2014. Mm. And then maybe canceled, even though never officially confirmed to be canceled.
So they didn't cancel it. They just changed developers twice.
Yeah.
So that's just been in development hell. So I think they're still trying to push that stone up the hill.
Also, didn't take place on an island.
Yeah, it's true. It was supposed to just be California. Yeah.
But I guess it was a metaphorical island because California was walled off.
Just stop it.
Yeah. Some deep Dead Island lore there, Dan.
Well, it was a thing because
Fable Legends was announced in 2013 and then canceled last year?
Yep.
Just last year. Yeah. So that even that was like three years. Took that to be canceled.
There was that BioWare what was it, 4-1?
Shadowverse?
RPG. Yeah.
No, wait, that's the collectible card game.
The Shadow something.
Yeah. I think they announced it at Gamescom. But it was like their multiplayer game that
What about the Dragon game that we did the IGN first for?
Scalebound.
Oh yeah.
Last year at E3, Microsoft said Scalebound would be their biggest 2017 release.
And then it was canceled, but then now there's some percolations about it not being canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there like a more recent story than the actual cancellation?
Unconfirmed reports.
I don't think I've heard anything about that. Yeah, I think that was canceled.
For right now, we're not getting Scalebound this year.
Platinum
at
least.
I guess just to say that we mentioned it, Duke Nukem Forever showed up at a lot of E3s.
Yeah, that's true. And it actually came out.
In very different forms, right?
Yep. Yeah, because they scrapped that one and restarted it several times.
And then there's that Phantom Dust reboot, which the reboot got canceled, but then they sort of remastered the original, and that is out now.
The HD remaster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man. Phantom Dust. Did you actually end up checking it out?
I haven't checked it out yet.
I'm curious to see what you think.
Look, the HDMI port previously inhabited by my Xbox One has been taken over by my Switch. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what can I do?
What are you supposed to do?
There's nothing I can do. Until they figure out a way to add HDMI ports to TVs, there's nothing I can do.
So if we would have all been at E3 in 1991, which E3 didn't exist then, we would have been like...
Winter CES.
Where's that California Raisins game?
Yeah.
What happened to that?
Yeah. Did you know there was a bootleg Donkey Kong Country 4 released for the NES in 1997?
Cool.
Yep.
We got to track that down.
Yeah. That's a scoop gem.
Scoop.
Ladies and gentlemen.
A scoop gem.
Trademark Game Scoop. 2017.
It's reserved. Camp Goose.
E3 is right around the corner. We look forward to seeing more games that we won't be playing for years and years to come. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there are probably hundreds of others, so tell us about yours.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I'm sure there's many we forgot about. Let's talk about loading screens. This is Matthew from LA, and he has some opinions on loading screens.
Who doesn't?
He says...
I'm against them.
Yeah, no kidding.
He says, like all other listeners, I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that I appreciate all the hard work you put into the show each and every week. The laughs are constant and the knowledge gained second to none. So thank you. It is consistently the best hour of my week.
You're welcome, Matthew, but not a question.
Bring on the loading screen.
He says, before my question, a little background. I'm 25, a basic white dude in LA, and a casual gamer. First system I ever owned was an Xbox. I used to mainly play sports games, shooters, and adventure games. Loved Gauntlet. I assume he doesn't mean the arcade original.
No.
He must mean what was Gauntlet?
Why do you think that?
What was it? Dark?
Well, he says he's a casual gamer who was first
because it came out more than 25 years ago.
He says, I'm getting more into gaming as I get older, currently obsessed with Hearthstone, and I own a PS4. as it allows me to escape after a stressful workday or play something on silent, which is code for get killed repeatedly in Call of Duty. Recently, I love Shadow of Mordor and Call of Duty, but found the vastness of Metal Gear and Final Fantasy unbearable. Mm. I got about 5% and stopped. Mm. Justin, I purchased Stardew Valley, but also fear it is too vast for me.
Best game.
I recently bought the Uncharted Collection, plus Uncharted 4, and as I write this to you, I have just finished Uncharted 2, and I'm moving on to Uncharted 3, and for the entirety of my time during both games, I found myself thinking, this is amazing. Why aren't all video games like this? And wow, how fun.
Ooh.
As I took a step back and pondered why I was feeling this way, it occurred to me. The Uncharted games, thus far, have absolutely no effing load screens. None.
That's it. That's the big
difference. So, my questions. Number one, are loading screens in modern games, large open world behemoths, a symptom of the memory and storage involved with the game?
You know what's crazy about this is that cartridges should not have loading screens.
But even Breath of the Wild does when you go into a shrine.
I know. Like, I thought we were going to get these cartridges and they'd have no loading. Well, it's bizarre to me.
First of all, there's always loading when you start it up. Like, there's that load. Yeah. But then some games are just better at loading stuff in the background. So as you're approaching new content, it's loading that in before you ever get to it. So it doesn't have to stop you and make you...
That's what, like, Uncharted's loading screens are the cutscenes, which is why they're not skippable.
Right. They're also well hidden in a lot of games.
Yeah, they hide them. And like GTA would do, I mean, first of all, some games are much better at this than others. Like, it's absolutely incredible that you can fly a jet across, what is it, Los Santos or whatever? It's weird that I'd spent 100 hours in that game and can't remember now. But you can like fly a jet from one end of the game world to the other. All the building, you know.
Oh, San Andreas.
San Andreas. And, you know, it's just seamless, but they do hide loading when you zoom out of one character and zoom into the other. You know, so some games, you know, Resident Evil would do it with the slow opening of the door and then walking through. It's loading the next room.
And Metroid was loading them behind the doors so you could shoot them for a while and they wouldn't open.
In Metroid Prime.
In Metroid Prime, they did mask it like it was opening.
GTA is a good example of the streaming thing because when you're just, you know, going across the level, you know, in a vehicle, it has time to load the next stuff you're going to see. But when you're skipping from one character to another, it's warping, which means it has to load in that entire new area, so it has to cover the loading.
You can see it in the older GTA games. You'd be going across a bridge, and it would, like, kind of jank and catch up, and sometimes it would just stop. And
they would do it, like, it was very noticeable in Vice City because the city was split into a couple. Yeah. Like, whenever you would cross the bridge, it was loading that chunk of the city.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, like, GTA 5 is just an incredible technical achievement in that way that you can run around that whole game world or fly around it and drive around it without it's just completely seamless.
Just be happy you don't have to switch discs anymore.
Oh,
the fact they had to do
that
it.
That got
they,
crazy even last generation. There was Xbox 360 games.
By the end, yeah.
But the fact that they were able to do that on the 360 and the PS3 for GTA was pretty crazy.
Like, it's crazy that's the same generation as, like, Perfect Dark Zero.
There are bad upfront loading screens these days. Prey is really bad.
Prey is bad about upfront and in between. Too. Yeah, especially toward the end of that game when you have to run back and forth a lot through a bunch of different zones. The console loading screens really stack up.
Like, I
played on SSD
mine had,
and
like,
that was
frozen
nice.
Or something. At one point, it took so long. I couldn't believe
they're
it.
They're really bad. It's the worst, or probably the second worst thing in like Elder Scrolls games. It's
the loading
screens.
Yeah.
It's just
like downloaded games on your system and cartridges. I mean, I know people out there can tell us why they have loading screens, and I want to know because I've never been. I don't know why. Like the reason a disc has a loading screen is that it's spinning.
It's physically
and a laser
spinning.
Is reading it.
Yes,
and it has to read all of the data.
Yes and no. So you're working with the transfer times between your hard drive and your RAM, and RAM is going to be is faster than even a cartridge, right? So So you have to transfer that data from the cartridge into your active system memory, and that's what sucks up the time.
Right.
So cartridges are faster than a traditional like 5400 RPM hard drive, and an SSD is going to be a lot faster than that.
Yeah.
But it's still not as fast as just being in RAM, which is instant access.
Mm-hmm. I used to so I played Skyrim twice, once on console and then once on PC, and my PC is much faster and more powerful. And then everything loaded in too quickly for me to be able to read little tooltips. I don't get the tooltips anymore.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, developers have gotten better about keeping you entertained.
I mean, the PS1 era, was, yes. I mean,
well, that's
some,
like
some game, some of them had games in it. Isn't that what Geometry Wars was?
Namco, like Tekken, had like Galaga in the loading screen.
There was a patent on that that just recently expired within the last couple of years.
No way. Yeah.
Like, I feel like younger gamers, this is a total, like, back in my day, but it's so funny that as we got so much better and more sophisticated about some aspects of gaming, but then in that early PS1 era, like, loading screens would be like 60 seconds. Like, it was
for every fight was, in Final Fantasy
like, load, VII. Yeah, to load, yeah. Like, a. Load a Ridge Racer race, you would have to play around a Galaga first.
Because that was like a big transition, a change of format for the whole industry. And they were still coming to terms with, you know, how best to either hide loading screens or make them more efficient.
Underrated loading screen was Symphony of the Nights, where it had the loading was wavy text, but you could mash the D-pad to like change like the pattern of the waviness. And I used to get a lot
of. You remember the sounds of the first loading screens you ever would have? If you grew up in the 80s, it would be a 6-inch floppy disk. You put it in and.
The mechanical. Yeah, I remember that.
And I think it was just spinning it, right? And reading off of it.
Actually, Kotaku actually just wrote a really good article about loading times, why they haven't decreased as things have gotten faster. And
they have decreased somewhat.
Somewhat, yeah, but the counter to that is that all the assets are getting higher definition. So when you have a much bigger texture, it you've got 8 times, 16 times as much information you're trying to transfer. Yeah. So unless and especially like consoles,
they call that Sam's Law. Sam's Law.
Yeah.
Keeps
sick. That's gonna.
Did you say Sam's Law?
Yes. I really hope that the Scorpio. When that comes out, and the next version of the PS4, they just at least have an option for an SSD, because it's one of the best upgrades that I've made to my PC in the past 5-10 years.
It's so great. They even start up fast.
Yeah, it just comes on really fast, and it's all about that transferring from your hard drive to your RAM. The faster you can do that, the faster you get. You're not slowed down by anything.
The gaming computer that you helped me build the SSD is too small to have very many games on it, so they're mostly on the old school hard drive. But the operating system is on the SSD, and its boot up time is faster than my Xbox. Probably not as fast as PS4, but it's definitely faster than my Xbox One.
I have a tool that you can use to shuttle games back and forth across that.
Yeah, I mean I don't care that much, but like the PS1 era. Thinking back to that era is crazy. Like I remember at Final Fantasy VII, you said it would have that blurry loading screen and load you into the battle, but then I used to, you could open up your PS1 and take the game out of the console because the whole battle was loaded into the PS1. And then you could like put in a music CD if you were going to do like some crazy long boss fight or something like that.
Whoa.
And then when the battle was ending, just put your disc back in and then it would start spinning and load you back into the game.
It's nice to be able to just turn off consoles now and do like power saver mode and turn it back on. And then you avoid all the load.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
It's sorry, I can sense that you're going to move on. No, I mean, the last thing, like, it was really noticeable for me in Skyrim, as I said, because that's a game that had, like, the loading screens were long enough on console that it changed the way I played the game. I'm like, if I open that door, I'm going to hit a loading screen, and I would just not want to go in there. Like, it made me stop wanting to loot things and stop wanting to explore caves by the end of the game. Like, and even though it completely broke on PlayStation, I think they also slowly got longer over time on Xbox, which is the console I was playing on.
Maybe
because your save file got larger and larger.
Like Fallout, yeah.
Like, yeah. And, on PlayStation, it ended up being notoriously completely hosed. But even on Xbox, like, it just got worse and worse, if my memory's right. And so, like, it was a night and day difference switching to PC, where suddenly just the freedom to not have to think about, like, do I really want to go in that Bard's College or not?
Yep. Yeah. When I played Skyrim, the load screens went so fast that I didn't get to read the tips. So I played through the entire time not realizing you could add favorites to switch inventories and spells.
Ooh.
So I spent way too much time in the menu screen, and I found that I'm like, what?
You loaded too fast.
Matthew has a PS. He says, Justin and Sam ranting and raving about Zelda has me on the hunt for a Switch. But before I make the jump, how are the load screens?
We touched on this a little. They're actually
in and out of shrines, and it makes you not want to play shrines.
People talk about how long it takes to get in and out of shrines, and you can skip. Like, there is a loading screen, but like I think some people don't know that like you hit the elevator and go down the elevator and load into the shrine. There's some odd that text that pops up, and you can mash through a lot of that.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
There's still a few seconds that are unavoidable.
Yeah, maybe it's 20 seconds when you go in and out of a shrine.
But in the entire,
maybe
all the open world doesn't have any.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like that's what
you can walk from one end of the map to the other without any loading,
unless you die.
Unless you die,
and that's not that bad then.
This is Gaz from Wales, UK.
Gaz.
Yep. Gaz, all right.
And he says, I have a serious concern and want to ask for your opinion and advice on gaming addiction, as I don't ever hear it mentioned. I've been an avid gamer since the ZX Sinclair Spectrum. Maybe he played Death Star Interceptor.
That's how we know he's from the UK, by the way.
Through the Mega Drive, PlayStation era, and now I have an Xbox and a Nintendo Switch.
Mega Drive is the second clue there.
Yeah. I fear it is starting to get too much. I'm married and I have a little boy and love to play games with him too. But it's getting to the stage where I just keep buying more games. I have several unfinished Xbox games and I seem to be buying a game every week for the Switch.
Oh, wow.
Yet while I play each new game, I'm already looking for the next fix despite having several to play. Really interested to hear your thoughts or advice on what I worry is becoming a serious concern. So I know this doesn't sound that serious to me. I think a video game addiction is something that's like disrupting your life.
Right. So it's less a matter of like, are you buying a lot of games? It's, are you spending a disproportionate amount of your life playing them? And like, even though you know you should be spending more time with your family, you don't.
Well, it makes me feel like every single man, not every man, but like it's so common for men to be like, I'm not going to go through a midlife crisis. Then they get in their 40s and go through a midlife crisis. Like I see over and over and over again, the older I get, I'm spending more and more money on games, but playing them less and less and less. What's wrong with me? Like, I see that on message boards. I see it in IGN comments. I see it all over the place. I think it's a very common – that's the irony of, like, you know, becoming an adult is, like, you have more disposable income. You know, your life is presumably, hopefully, a little bit more comfortable. It's not – you know, video games are still expensive, but when you're a kid, $60, man, you got to commit. And when you're an adult, you know, with a decent job, it's not – quite as big a deal, and so you kind of pick up games and then you end up playing them less often.
There's a simple formula that explains this. More disposable income minus time equals a larger stack of games that you can't get to.
And also, like, there is a collector's mentality that goes to it.
Just gonna say that.
Yeah, it's like I just want to own them all. And that's, you know, that's entirely separate thing from being addicted to games themselves. It's just I want to collect these things.
Yeah, and like that can make people happy. Like if you look at your game library and you say like, wow, what a cool complete Switch game library I have. If that makes you happy, then that's great.
Or every Zelda game, or, you know, whatever, you know, Mega Man, like whatever you're a fan
of. Yeah, or like deep collecting like that. I mean,
like people feel that way. Like I feel that way about my bookshelf, I guess. Like it's like sort of a reflection of me as a person. And it's funny, like my wife and I have this bookshelf and we don't completely split it up into his half and her half, but you can tell like my side is all like genre fiction. Like it's all science fiction and fantasy books. And then her side is all like, you know, mystery books. And it's like your game library can be a little bit of that too. It's like, you know, you feel good about buying things, even if you don't get to spend that much time playing things. Like,
plus, I mean, the fact is that like gaming is not like, even if you're buying a game a week, like a full price $60 game a week, that's not that expensive a hobby in the grand scheme of hobbies. Like if you're
a car, you know, who
if
knows
you're a car guy, if you're going skiing a lot, you're going on a lot of trips.
Snowboarding's really expensive,
right? So and like you don't get to do that every week, and you can spend a lot of money doing that. So if it's your hobby and you enjoy it, then like spending within your means a reasonable amount of money is great. Like,
I'd also say,
you happy.
Like, it can be fun to, you know, thrifty gaming. Like, sort of how much enjoyment can I get out of, like, I want 100% the games that I own. Like, I want to get every achievement. I want to play this game in some different ways or with different characters. Like, I don't know. That's totally, like, a valid way to experience your game library as well.
Yeah. Gaz, if your son was coming to you saying, Daddy, I'm hungry, and you're like, go away, kid, I'm playing Game of War, then I'd be a little bit worried you had a gaming addiction.
Yeah, it's like the moment your life and then the people around you start to suffer because you're playing too many games, like that's a problem.
On a personal level, I mean, even I'm going to have kids now, so it's like it's a completely lost cause. But even before I had kids, I'd given up on my backlog. Like I used to keep track of it. There's websites I'd like to give him a plug because I used to like it, but there's a backlog website where you can plug in your games and it'll tell you like how many hours it would take you to complete them all. And you can check off like, okay, this game I beat, this game I 100%ed, you know, and you can sort of like every gamer, you can get really obsessive about it. And I used to do that obsessively. And then eventually like the backlog, like I have 1,000 Steam games now. Like I gave up. I let go of it. And I've talked about it on Scoop before. Like, if I play a game for an hour and, you know, I'm not into it or whatever, it doesn't feel good that I spent $60 on that. But I also just choose to be kind to myself and say, you know what, I'm not going to beat myself up over not wanting to play this game anymore.
You should take a sabbatical and just play those 1,000 Steam games.
I've thought about turning it into, like, an IGN thing, like playing one every lunch break or something like that. But that is almost certainly never going to happen.
Yeah, there's just an enormous amount of time that it takes.
3 years later, that project would be complete.
This is Rydian from South Wales, United Kingdom. So a neighbor of Gaz. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you two know each other?
I don't know if Wales and... I am assuming Wales and South Wales are near each other, but maybe that's my ignorance. He says, "Hi guys, love the show. Can't wait for the end of the week so I can get my GameScoop fix. Sometimes, no matter what game I'm playing, from Mario to The Witcher 3, the game just hands me my butt. Nothing I do goes right, and no matter what I do, I just can't get on it. Does this ever happen to you guys with the amount of games you have to play?"
Absolutely. Sure. I mean, there are certain games that are just your kryptonite and are built to, just not the way you like to play.
Well, is this because I beat you at Injustice?
No, no, I'm just really bad at fighting games. But so are you.
Yes, I am. To be fair.
I was going to say, it's not even like certain games that are like your kryptonite. Like even games that you are generally good at, sometimes you just have a bad day. And sometimes you just have to like walk away for a while. And when you come back in a day or two, then all of a sudden you're amazing at it again.
Yeah, there's definitely like an element of like getting into the zone and something like Overwatch and just dominating. And then another night you just can't steal a kill. I do chalk some of that up to like, did you have a good internet connection? Well, frankly, but he
says for Mario.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh man. Yeah. I've had some Mario fails. You know, after when you play like a classic arcade game, like Donkey Kong, which is a really hard game. And, it's obviously competitive. There's movies about it. Sometimes if you have a drink, you get a little bit better at Donkey Kong.
Well,
sometimes if you have two drinks, you're like, man, this is the best I've ever done at Donkey Kong.
But,
and then it goes away so quickly. And then like not even a third drink. Maybe it's just the setting in of like you're not loose up, you're not loose anymore. You're just terrible.
Especially for things
it goes downhill fast.
Yeah.
Geometry Wars, or there's a whole category of games where they don't require your full attention. If you let your mind kind of wander and like part of you is playing the game and part of you is thinking about something else, you'll realize you've made it farther in like Pac-Man or Geo Wars than you ever have before without even really paying too much attention to what's happening on the screen. I do that, at least.
Personally, there are games, some of my favorite games, in fact, are games that I enjoy playing and losing. Like FTL and XCOM are games that sometimes you'll get a bad break.
Basically can't not lose in those.
Right, and well, yeah, you can't. But
sometimes you'll get to that mothership in FTL, and then there's another one.
Well, it's the same one, but you have to kill it three times. But anyway, for me, the... winning isn't necessarily the goal in those games. It's having a good story out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, remember that time I got that great weapon and almost won? Like, that's just as good to me as winning in most cases.
Yeah, like you say, Sam, there have been scientific studies that show that two alcoholic drinks, like, gets the
creative... Are you serious?
Yeah, gets the creative parts of your brain firing, and it gives you a burst of energy and focus. But also, like you say, if you continue, that there's a very sharp, steep roller coaster decline. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know there was any science.
Very true with really music games.
Is there any guidance on how big those drinks should be?
Right.
Well, Dan, you're a big boy, so you're probably all right.
Yeah, it's true. It's time to share what we've been playing.
Ooh.
Who would like to share first?
Ooh.
Dan.
I'm playing Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yeah.
Love that game.
It's neat. I mean, So it's a game that makes a fantastic first impression because it's a VR game. It's on PSVR. It's on Oculus. It's on Vive. I'm playing on Oculus because that's what I own. And it uses motion controllers. And you've got four people on the bridge of a Federation starship. The default one is based on the new movies. You can also play in certain capacities in a really detailed recreation of the original Enterprise from the 70s series.
I still haven't seen like what it looks like to be in the captain's chair in that, but I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it looks great. It's a very loving recreation of
that's awesome.
Of all of that stuff. And it's four player co-op. You can play single player if you want and just order the AI around or just jump between the seats and do stuff.
Because there's like a campaign basically.
Yeah, it's a short campaign. It's like five or six missions, and each of them takes about half an hour. So it's short, but then there's a continuing missions option where it has kind of a randomized version of those.
And that's the party game side of it, right?
Right.
Like if you want to just entertain, like it's fun with friends.
Yeah, and it's not so much stuff that it would require a bunch of people to do. Mm-hmm. It's just they've divided up the tasks deliberately so that you have to kind of coordinate between stations. And that creates kind of that social dynamic of having to ask other people to do stuff so that you can do what you want to do. And I think it's at its most fun when nobody knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
When you're bumbling around, like my favorite episodes of Star Trek are when Scotty's like, how do the shields work? I don't know.
Yeah. Fire phasers. And then the guy's like,
there is an episode of TNG where they come across the stupid ship.
Yeah.
And they say, make us go.
Yep. Make it go.
Make it go.
Yeah. There was a guy I was playing with on my crew last night who was in the tactical seat, and he kept talking about firing the lasers. I'm like, stop. No, they're phasers.
I'm firing lasers.
Yeah. He wouldn't stop.
You're the captain, so you could tell him to stop.
Yeah,
yeah, and like I did find that people kind of fell into following orders. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever say belay that order?
I didn't. I might try that tonight.
Picard says that.
Yes, it's neat in that respect, like in discovering it together and having those goofy moments and watching people flail their arms around.
Mm.
I think it's not going to have a lot of long legs to it because 95% of what you're doing in there is combat or avoiding combat, and the combat just isn't very good. It's very simple. It doesn't even have like shield facing, so you can never say divert power to the forward shield. It's always So it's very limited in that way. It's not as tactically deep as something like Starfleet Command or Bridge Commander, which are games that I played the hell out of. But so I'll have that review up by the end of the week.
Cool. Justin.
Oh, I'm playing a little thing called Twin Peaks on Netflix.
Ooh.
No, I mean, I have limited free time in my life, and, I finished Zelda, and I was talking about The Witcher for weeks and finally put The Witcher down. I don't think anyone ever truly finishes The Witcher. It finishes you, eventually. Played a lot of that game and put it down, and then I've been...
Did you get to Skellige?
No, I never made it that far. I didn't see the big whale, which was the whole point of me playing that game to begin with.
That's in the second area of Skellige. It's really cool.
So when I do play games, I'm still trying to work my way through three-starring all the 150 and 200cc courses in Mario Kart.
Mm.
So that's playing a lot of fun. But mainly, it's E3 time at IGN means it's fairly high stress, fairly high anxiety around the IGN office. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. But, I mean, it's a busy time of year.
Sure.
So when I come home, I'm wiped, and I just want to watch a little bit of Netflix and chill solo.
Whoa.
Oh, but wait a second.
Solo.
You're not helping this.
All right.
Literally chill.
I hear you.
All right. And then just the idea of, jumping into some big high stress video game is not what I'm interested in right now. But I'll tell you that Twin Peaks, I can't wait to find out what happened to Laura Palmer. Her life was out of control, Damon.
You're watching the new one or are you streaming old?
I never saw the original.
Yeah. So I've only ever seen the pilot of the originals.
Oh man. It's she was a high school student but had a lot of secrets that she kept close to the chest.
Well.
Now her secrets will be yours.
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, I just played ARMS about 5 minutes before we started the show.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You guys can watch videos of ARMS and get just what it's like to play it. I don't really. It's not for me.
Mm.
That's fine. I jumped.
Leg man.
I jumped once in Magikarp jump.
Yeah.
That's not for me either.
That's the new Pokemon.
Yeah.
Well, game. It's sort of a joke app disguised as a game. I don't know.
It's very simplistic and it's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's funny.
A bird can take your Magikarp and it's really sad. And then I beat Zelda, so that's what I was working on this week.
Oh wow, that's a big deal.
I should say, Damon,
I know people don't want to hear me talk about it, so I won't.
It's an old mobile game that I played a couple years ago, but I rediscovered, so I'd like to give it a shout out on the show. The Blockheads. The Blockheads. It might just be Blockheads on the App Store, but it's a 2D Minecraft clone, but sort of the twist or spin that they put on it is that you can queue up. You have multiple people that you control that you can tap and switch between. It can be like, you go mine out these 100 blocks, and then if you close the app and come back, it tells you, like, hey, while you were gone, Justin mined out these blocks and got this stone and got this bronze. And so the game can sort of be playing while you're away. You can say, like, you run the furnace and, turn all this raw bronze into ingots. And you, mine out down here. And then when you come back, that'll just be done and complete. So it's a nice mobile game to pop into, chop down, queue up some trees to be chopped down, queue up some blocks to be mined out, and then it'll be done when you come back into it.
Blockheads.
Yeah.
I have one other game, speaking of blocks, that you and I played, which is, we got a new Tetris cabinet in the office. New old cabinet.
What?
1987.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Atari Tetris. It's really nice.
Oh.
It's really fun to play, and it has a cool head-to-head mode, and it has, it's like the version before Nintendo licensed it. So it's Atari, and it has, different Russian music. But it's really fun. It's what everybody really experienced early on for Tetris, aside from the people that adopted earliest on PC.
It's like before they introduced being able to hold a piece on reserve.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. You got to use the piece you get.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but it just has a, it's just a good two-player head-to-heads stand-up upright Tetris.
And it was surely before you could spin infinitely, right?
Yeah, you can't do that. That's crazy.
That's a modern Tetris.
Really?
And to spin both ways, the control panel has the buttons on either side of the joystick.
So
you're not going to be spinning both ways. Yeah.
It's a little.
You pick one.
Yeah, but I've seen people really
like
good.
I played Tetris on the 89 Game Boy, and I don't think it had either of the, I think
no, it,
you,
no, that,
you
it
could,
didn't.
You could spin that. You could spin that infinitely, and it had no reserve piece.
The Tetris company now that licenses Tetris, like you're allowed to do whatever you want, like put your characters in it, do this, do that, but they have like guidelines or rules like that Tetris has to be, and I think you have to be able to hold a piece is one of them, and like you have to be able to spin infinitely now. Like they have these like this set of like best practices or guidelines.
That's funny
that weren't that weren't in place back then.
This version of Tetris came out on the NES. It's one of the rarest NES games.
Tengen one.
I guess it's not one of the rarest NES games. It's a rare NES game, and it's the Tengen Tetris. Tengen is just Atari making bootleg games for the NES.
Pirated NES
and
games.
Some legit ones. And they made this, and then there was this big lawsuit about it. You can read about it in David Chef's Game Over. But basically, Nintendo got the license too, and Atari and Nintendo were both putting out a Tetris on NES. So this one was put out and recalled. And on NES, it's really interesting. It's the same game, good music from the arcade and everything. They put in a co-op mode. The co-op mode has a double-wide trough.
Wow.
And you both are getting blocks dropped in from either side, and it's kind of fun.
That's awesome.
That sounds cool. Yeah. Didn't we also get Tekken 7 cabinets today?
Just got a paired up Tekken 7 cabinet in the office just a few minutes ago. We got a Miss Pac-Man cocktail table with the speed chip. We're getting a bunch of new arcade games in our arcade. Come by on a first Friday and you can play them.
Yeah, except this first Friday is sold out, I think.
Yeah. I'm seven.
Yeah. Remember when Tekken 3 was a big deal on PlayStation?
Yeah, dude, Tekken 3, that's the year that I got, like, because I did the thing that we've talked about on the show before where I didn't get a PlayStation 1 at launch. I waited a few years and then was able to get Tekken 3 and Final Fantasy 7, and, like, for some reason, Oddworld was a big deal to me. Like,
was it because it was graphically impressive, mainly? Is that?
Yeah.
I remember why 3 was such a huge deal. It just was.
I don't know if it's the first one that came to PlayStation or, like, I remember video game magazines were really hyping it up, and me and I was in college, so my friends and I were into, like, playing it competitively.
First that's the only Eddie Gordo.
Yeah, it's the only Tekken I've ever played.
Me too.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, Sam, that's actually a really good question. I'd be curious to find out why. Like, I feel like a lot of people, me included, like Tekken 3, like that was my big experience with that
franchise.
Yeah,
that's a cool question to answer. Our review of Tekken 7 that's up right now, it's a review in progress for now, but Derry, I think, wrote it.
Yep.
Derry Heskey. He talks a lot about like the storyline and how weird it is of the Tekken series, and I didn't realize that that was something that people have been following, but it's bizarre.
Marty and I have been brainstorming. We don't quite have it figured out, but we want to do a feature on just the insane, weird video game stories. Like there's Cammy is like a clone of M. Bison, but a female version. Like they're always insane.
I mean, Mortal Kombat's just totally bonkers, too.
They all are.
Yeah. I've been playing Disgaea 5 Complete on Switch. It's no secret that I'm a big Disgaea fan.
Got back into it.
Yeah, like I loved Disgaea 5 on PS4, and now it's great on Switch. And I didn't even realize that the complete version includes all these other characters from previous Disgaea games, and then also just other NIS games. The Witch and the Hundred Knight, whatever that is. But so like right as you start the game, you're just given all these extra characters and new worlds to go to, or if you beat them, they can join your party. And so, like, right off the bat, your character party is just, like, 20 characters long. And
does that break the game?
No, not at all. It's just, I mean, not for me. I'm having a great time playing it. Yeah, they're not, they're, like, level, they don't, not, like, hugely leveled up or anything right away. So, but that game has, like, really chill music and a very repetitive, sort of monotonous, gameplay loop, which I like, works for me. You know, you go out on your mission, you go on your tactical combat scenario, come back to your home base, buy new items, heal your characters.
Are you playing mainly in portable form?
I was when we traveled home to Kansas City last weekend. I played it on the flights and in the hotel room. But since I've been home, I've been playing it docked with the Pro Controller, and it feels great. But like, my wife went to bed at 10 p.m. last night, and then just for the next 3 hours, I'm just like playing Disgaea, and like the music is chill, and I'm just slowly just like sinking down in the couch. So it's like 1 a.m. like, okay, I gotta go to bed.
That's a good break for murdering teens.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we talked about Friday the 13th on last week.
Okay.
Friday the 13th, the game.
You got to see the glitch that he recorded in that game. It's up on IGN as of today, which is Wednesday.
Yeah, we put the video up today, and I posted on my Twitter. Pretty amazing glitch that I was able to capture yesterday.
It's so good. Jason's just trying to stab this lady, and she's like 10 feet above him, just running around in the air, and he's just slowly walking back and forth trying to stab her.
But then it goes off the rails. She floats out of the cabin and like out
into
the woods.
It just keeps going. It has a wonderful ending.
I don't know why the teens in the movies never tried.
I know.
That.
Just float away from Jason. Yeah. It's so simple.
They're always so dumb in those movies.
Yeah.
Deserve what they get.
All right. Our video game 20 questions suggestion this week comes from the Cobra Commander from Cobra Island. And what? Before we get to it, he has...
Oh, that's a hint.
Yeah, he actually has a question that we're going to discuss first. So he says, first, after recently finishing a couple of different games, I found myself wanting to go back and play a little Fallout 4. Mm. Thanks to the IGN guide and the map, I've pretty much done everything possible in this game. So I went to the PlayStation Store to see if there was any new DLC. Sadly, there was none. Which brings me to my question, why? For a game this huge, with such a huge following, why don't developers keep making DLC for these kinds of franchises? I know there was some content the first year, and I got all of it, but then it just stopped. Does DLC just not make money? I would think a game like Fallout or Witcher or other huge games like this could easily maintain an ongoing DLC and make money on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just diminishing returns. Mm. The more DLC you get out soon after a game comes out, the more people are still actively playing it or want to come back to it soon. They have fond memories of it fresh in their brain, want to come back to it. I think the longer you go out, you'll still get sales from a guy like this who's super invested in it, but that's a dwindling crowd. Yeah. So unless you're putting out just a full expansion, which is a massive investment, and basically it can be as much as like a new game, it doesn't necessarily make sense to keep putting out DLC for a game like that. In certain cases, it does. Certain games, they do keep putting out DLC for years.
Well, it's pretty, I didn't play any of the Fallout 4 DLC because I fell off that game, but in my head, they supported it for a long time. They had six or seven.
They had two rounds of it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's like more than a lot of single-player games get. I think it makes a lot of sense in a multiplayer context. Like, Killer Instinct is still having multiple seasons with new fighters. Obviously, Dota, League of Legends keep introducing new, modules that you can add on to. In a single player game, if you release an expansion for a single player game, the most sales you could ever get ever would be, the maximum number of people that bought the game to begin with. So, and obviously, half of them or whatever percentage of them aren't going to buy it. So it's a tough financial proposition. But the flip side is, they do the math. They say, 20% or 50% of our players will buy this DLC, but we're not making new textures, we're not making new characters or anything like that. Like they know they need to invest in, new writing and maybe some new areas, maybe some new dialogue, but then they don't need to do like new systems or things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for a Fallout that you can just keep playing forever that never ends, it sounds like he's looking for a Fallout MMO. Which, Fallout 4 is designed as a single-player game that will end eventually.
It would be a very different style of game.
Yeah.
But, MMOs are the example of something where you've got people hooked in and they'll keep buying stuff generally. Like a good portion of them will in a free-to-play structure or in a subscription one where they've got expansions like World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in either one of those contexts, there's more revenue that they can extract from their like very hardcore audience, right? Like if you release a Fallout 4 expansion pack that's, $10 or $20 or whatever, like you've set a ceiling on like the maximum amount of money you can make from your Fallout superfan. Like for World of Warcraft, that's not the case. Like there's not really a ceiling if someone's crazy hardcore. They give you, like, here's a $20 pet you can buy, and here's some cosmetic options you can buy, and more character slots in a free-to-play game. And, they do.
One would hope they're using their time and money to work on a different, really cool new game.
Manpower is a big thing. And I guess with Fallout 4, though, they do have mods on... They did eventually get mods on PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a more... Both. It's a more limited capacity than on Xbox.
Yeah, it definitely launched. Yeah.
But on PC, they can still do stuff that neither console can because they can mess with whatever they want. So if you really want a limitless
Fallout.
You could just
play again with some sort of crazy Macho Man, Randy Savage mod.
I've never seen the stats. Like maybe some developer on Gamma Sutra has done a postmortem where you can learn more about this. But I'd be curious to see like how soon, like Witcher 3 he brought up where like Hearts of Stone came out fairly soon after the game, but Blood and Wine was like way later, and it, like it was like, how did that do for them? Like, people have moved on.
Yeah. Those are full on expansions, pretty much. Yeah. So like,
I'm just saying, you ride the wave of like, you have to balance. Like, if your DLC comes out too fast, people are mad and feel like it should have been in the game. But if you wait too long, like, you know, the ship's kind of sailed and people have moved on to other stuff. They've put the game down and maybe they're not interested in it anymore. So there's a balancing act there. And I'd be curious to see, like, did each of those Fallout expansions sell a little worse than the one before? I don't know.
And they're different. They put out different kinds in Fallout. They put out like these kind of construction packs, which are geared toward the people who are just in there to build a bunch. And then they put out some bigger ones, like Nuka World, that are focused toward people who want to do single player adventuring.
Yeah. Spooky Island, as I think was the actual name.
That's Spooky Island. Cobra Commander has a follow-up question. He says, I heard a few rumors that Obsidian may be working on a new release for Fallout, kind of like they did with Vegas. Any truth to this that you've heard?
Probably not. Almost certainly not. So there were a lot of rumors that sprung up around like the Project New Orleans stuff that Obsidian was working on, that Josh Sawyer was tweeting about New Orleans, and in a notebook that looks somewhat Fallout-ish, but that is confirmed to not be a Fallout project that they were working on.
I think Dan's right. I think probably not, but I don't think... I mean, the short answer is no. I haven't heard any rumors, but I would say that Obsidian is a company, like, you know, they're turning to Kickstarter to fund their products, and they take on contract work for other publishers. They do a mixture of, like, here's our own project, and then they work on other people's stuff. So I wouldn't consider it out of the realm of possibility.
No, absolutely not. In fact, they've said, we would love to work on another Fallout game.
And New Vegas, man. I mean, maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part because of how excellent New Vegas was.
Yeah, but New Vegas is the best Fallout game as far as I'm concerned.
Whoa.
Well.
It might be my favorite.
I'm a three man myself.
I like three, too. Cobra Commander has a follow-up to the follow-up.
It's not allowed.
As Omega Cops, what exactly are you enforcing in? Where are your uniforms? The Omega Cops patrol Camp Goose, and we make sure nobody steals a Scoop Gym.
That's right.
We're actually plain clothes officers.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. Which I think announcing that maybe gives it away a little bit, but...
And which brings us to Video Game 20 Questions, which was provided by Cobra Commander. Let the question
and where
in.
Where is he from?
From Cobra Island.
Cobra Island.
I think that's in Wales.
Let the questioning begin.
Was this game originally available on a cartridge?
Nope.
All right. So it could be an arcade game or a disc of some sort.
Or digital.
Some sort of digital offering.
I'm gonna let you narrow down like the old stuff.
Is this from the generations? Is this from 2000 or later?
Yes.
Okay. Was it multi-platform?
Yes.
Mm. Is this game on current generation consoles?
No.
Is it on the PS2 era of consoles?
Yes.
Oh. So late PS2, GameCube, Xbox. I guess not that late, actually. Never mind.
Just PS2, GameCube, Xbox.
Maybe PC?
Nah.
No, I take it. GameCube, yeah, never mind. It's not late at all. I'm all mixed up.
Is this a multiplayer game?
No.
Single player, multi-platform, PS2 era. PS2
era. I mean, it could be in, like Morrowind?
Well, hold on. Like, did this game come out in Japan? Or, excuse me, was this game developed in Japan?
No.
Now we're.
Are there sequels?
Yes.
Is it an RPG?
Yes.
Did you totally just like? How did you land on Morrowind?
Yeah, that's weird.
That sounded kind of Morrowind-ish.
So it's a multi-platform RPG not developed in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Dan, you may be onto something.
I mean,
here.
It could also be something from BioWare.
Yeah. Yeah, so how do we want to go about this? Was this game played in the first person?
I don't think so. That's 10.
Did it come out on GameCube?
No.
Yeah, so that...
That's still... Like, BioWare games still didn't come out on GameCube, did they?
No. I think we're looking at... Well, did the BioWare games come out on PC and Xbox?
I think they were like PC only back in that era, weren't they?
No.
Mostly?
Well, I mean, like KOTOR came out on Xbox.
Is this a BioWare game?
Yes.
Oh, dang.
Could very well be KOTOR.
Is this a Star Wars game?
Yes.
But it, okay, is it? So
I asked if there were sequels.
Yes, if there were sequels, does that?
Is mean there a sequel to KOTOR 2?
There is no sequel to KOTOR 2.
Well,
unless you count the Old Republic, which is an MMO. Which
I don't really want to ruin it. Is this the original game in a franchise or a sub-franchise, whatever you would want to consider it?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Is it Knights of the Old Republic?
Yes.
Woo! We did it.
2003.
You should have just switched it to Morrowind at some point.
credit to Dan on that one.
Yeah, 2003, Xbox and PC. Currently available on iOS.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, actually, I don't really recommend it on that platform. Yeah.
And that one's at least more usable on a touchscreen because the combat is pausable.
Yeah. It's fine. Like, I actually, look, like, it's like, I've played it quite a bit and actually played it fairly recently. Like, it's impressive what they were able to do, but they spent so much time focusing on the how that they forgot to ask if they could, that they didn't stop to ask if they should. Yeah. Like, it totally works. Like, you swipe left and right to look left and right and pause the combat. Like, it's very workable, but it's still kind of like, well, like, I wouldn't recommend it on that platform.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one you go and play on PC and install some mods, texture updates.
Mm. Yep.
Get play some Savic.
KOTOR is a real good video game.
Damn well is.
All right, that's all the scoops we have for this week. Next week will be our last scoop before E3, and we'll plan to do a big E3 preview predictions episode next week. Yes. Until then, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com or omegacops@ign.com.
It's a real email address.
Camp Goose.
Or Camp Goose.
Wait, I already forgot. I think it's Goose Camp.
I like Goose Camp.
Well, you've got omegacops@ign.com if you care to use that one.
A real email address.
That works. You can reach us there. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Dan. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.